I'm Alexander Hefner, your host on The Open Mind, and this is an audio podcast exclusive of our program. I'm delighted to welcome today Ira Shapiro, author of The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis, and more recently, Broken, Can the Senate Save Itself and the Country? Ira, it's a pleasure to meet you virtually after having read your works, reviewed The Last Great Senate for the Philly Inquirer some years ago. Thanks for joining me.
No, it's great to be with you, Alexander. Thanks for having me.
Ira, you are a longtime Senate staffer, someone who has seen the institution up close. And one of the things that is most troubling about the current Senate and the way that it operates is that it is almost deferential to the judicial branch in the judiciary's usurping of the meaning of the Senate, for the Senate to be about installing a judiciary that, whether it's Supreme Court nominations or lower court nominations, that are going to, in effect, support the will of that majority. And in a strange and peculiar sense, I don't know if you've seen it in the history of this institution, the United States Senate, the kind of deference to the judiciary that it intends to install, and in a sense, breaking down that branch of government so that the Senate is really serving just the interests of this judiciary. And I wonder how you look at it historically, if you find that this particular climate is unusual in that sense, in that the Senate is exclusively about getting the results you want at the Supreme Court.
Well, I don't know if I would say it's completely unusual, but I share your view that it's somewhat unprecedented. I would take issue a little bit with what you said about deference to the judiciary. I think it is, unfortunately, more a question, as you were getting at the end of your statement, to the notion of installing people in the courts who agree with your ideological view, the Republican senator's ideological view, and therefore would carry forward their impact even if they lose the White House and the Senate. So I think it is a terrible, from the standpoint of a Democrat, it is a terrible development that they have been so successful in installing so many judges with that kind of ideology. From the standpoint of the country, I think it will have long-term impact that's very adverse. You and I think, who believe that we needed a Senate of the sort that used to function, can only regret that their ideological predisposition has been so strong that they've carried it into the judiciary.
In this climate of the pandemic, we had hoped that there would not be scapegoating by representatives of the House or the Senate, that these gentlemen and ladies would rise to the occasion and represent the better angels of our upper chamber. And I want you to assess whether or not any of that has occurred in the face of this extraordinary public health challenge and catastrophe.
Well, I think that we not only have a public health challenge, unprecedented, and catastrophe, and we have it during a very highly charged election year that would have been an intense election year under any circumstances. Given that, I would say that the Senate has not failed us. That is to say, and I say the Senate, the House, working with usually Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, they have come together enough to produce a series of legislative responses that by historic standards are very large. Whether they're large enough, you know, we can debate. You and I might say, yeah, that was a good effort or a fair effort, but it isn't anywhere near enough. And so each time they do something, they then sort of go back to their corners temporarily and start taking partisan shots at each other. Senator McConnell, most glaringly, of course, took his, you know, made his attack on the sort of blue state bailouts. I'm not going to help any of those states. I suspect that he has backed off that to some extent, and I suspect that political imperatives will require them to back off it, Republicans to back off it. So I don't think they failed us completely in this period. I contrast that to the way they handled the impeachment, in which I think they failed us 100%.
So now that we are where we are, your last great Senate book is a testament to the fortitude of personality and patriotism, devotion to country that enabled Republicans and Democrats not just to get along and to reconcile differences, but to achieve remarkable progress for our country. And in this climate, where we're just treading above water that is survivable, what reforms need to be implemented in the event that Vice President Biden is elected, or even in the scenario that Donald Trump is reelected? What reforms can be instituted? And in your mind, does it really require the turning of leadership in the Senate from Mitch McConnell to, presumably, it would be Leader Schumer?
Well, I think that President Trump's reelection, which I regard as a near impossibility, but if Trump is reelected, then there literally is no hope for a substantial change in the Senate. The Senate would continue to be the Republicans would be slavishly deferential to Trump, because after everything he's done, he would have been reelected. The only hope for the Senate, I believe, is a clear-cut Biden victory, which I believe would bring in a Democratic majority in the Senate, but even if it didn't, would bring about a situation where people started to really assess what they felt about the Republican Party and what they felt about being senators. You know, my shorthand for it, Alexander, is Rob Portman goes back to being Rob Portman, a very constructive public servant most of his career. So, but it's not going to happen. Well, it requires two things to happen. One, it requires the Democrats to win the presidential election. But I will allow for the possibility that this enormous public health challenge and economic challenge going forward might be enough to jar changes. And you may remember in the last great Senate, in 1963, the Senate was sort of not spinning its wheels a lot, not doing really well. Mike Mansfield, the leader, even was willing to speak to the Senate and tell him his terms for staying and offer up the possibility of leaving as leader. But the assassination of President Kennedy and the civil rights crisis at the time jarred changed things. People stepped up in a different way. So I don't rule out the possibility that this enormous crisis will prompt people to change, but it's just hard for me to see how it could happen if Trump were really reelected.
Isn't it also true, Ira, thinking of another book and guest that we hosted within the last year, John Lawrence, about the class entering Congress after Watergate, that we are well overdue for an upgrade when it comes to the ethics and character overall of the congressional branch. Specifically, we're in a climate now where the Supreme Court is ruling on the merit of a congressional subpoena, something that has been lawfully executed for 200 years. And is it your hope in the scenario of a change of leadership in the Senate that there is a new momentum reenacting or attempting to advance the post-Watergate reforms that were so crucial to safeguarding our democracy at a time when there was a consensus on the Supreme Court 9-0 about the requiring the president to be a law-abiding branch of government and a law-abiding citizen. And that seems to be slipping from our grasp when we have a court that is listening to, again, the merit, to many historians, it would seem unprecedented that a Supreme Court would rule that the executive branch does not, and the president does not have to comply with a congressional subpoena.
I think that's important. You're raising, obviously, a fundamental question. With respect to sort of a new generation of people in Congress who would make significant changes and move the country forward, I think we are seeing that. I think that's what the class of 2018 in the House actually was. Those people, we may look back on them 10 or 20 years from now and conclude that they were a significant group of young leaders who came in and had the same kind of effect that the class of 74 had in the post-Watergate period. That group. I also think we've got a lot of talented senators. Frankly, if you look at Chris, I don't want to just say Chris Coons, Chris Murphy, and Chris Van Hollen, there must be somebody not named Chris, but there's a lot of great young talent in the Senate. So it's a matter of the urgency of the times, leaders, new leaders stepping forward. I tend to be positive about that. You know, but one of the interesting things, Alexander, about the court case that was so striking to me as a lawyer is who would have thought that the question of whether a congressional subpoena could be resisted by the president or third parties working with the president, who would have thought that hadn't been adjudicated before? And the reason it hadn't been adjudicated ever was that the presidents and Congress tugging and pulling at each other have always worked these questions out. It didn't go to the Supreme Court in this form. So to that extent, Trump's unprecedented resistance, Bill Barr's unprecedented assault on the rule of law, these are the things that have changed. And then we will see whether the Supreme Court has moved as far in the partisan direction as I fear it has.
Is Leader McConnell's view so warped that he can't see the hypocrisy of being a so-called originalist or federalist society endorser and member, and to see that the Supreme Court is considering not just the unitary executive theory, meaning the president shall not come under any legal scrutiny under any circumstance, but it is neutering the what has been the longstanding legislative and judicial prerogatives of separation of powers. And to think that Leader McConnell has gone the distance with all these judges packing the court with people who are going to inherit Donald Trump's legacy. And that legacy is in many ways a neutering of at least one, if not two, branches of government.
I think there is no, and I say this seriously, rather than ad hominem, I think there is no limit to where Senator McConnell will go to keep his power and to keep the Republicans in power.
But he couldn't
I understand the question.
I know.
Does Senator McConnell, who has, you know, obviously cared in the past about congressional prerogatives, how can he possibly support judges and rulings that neuter those prerogatives? I think that's a good question. But I think the answer, and he would be appalled if a Republican Congress couldn't subpoena Obama, the Obama administration, or the Biden administration. But his view of what matters in terms of keeping his power is right-wing judges who will be very hard on progressive legislation. They will strike down progressive legislation that is regulatory legislation. They will be tend to be on the side of the anti-abortion forces, which matter a great deal to parts of his party. So I think that there's no limit to where he would go to keep his power. And that's his calculus.
Ira, I suppose my question, and forgive the interruption.
Forgive the long answer.
No worries. This is a new format we're exploring. And delighted for you to be listening in. I guess McConnell has been credited with a kind of sophisticated strategy to stonewall the progressive causes that, or to deny legitimacy to the progressive causes that you refer to. I just wonder, you know, power at any cost and absolute power is certainly what he's after, but it really is not clear that whether or not he would be able to have consolidated that power without sacrificing the rule of law in the way that he has. And so, you know, for all those who credit McConnell with a cunning legislative tactician's strategy, he couldn't do it in a way that preserved the rule of law.
Well, obviously, he doesn't care about the rule of law as you and I would understand it. I mean, look, we're learning when you think there's no bottom, you find that it's worse than you thought. For that, I would not have thought necessarily that Attorney General Barr would mount the assault on the rule of law that he has. I mean, Barr was he wasn't a terrible attorney general the first time around. He had become a very wealthy man. I would not have thought that he was coming back into public life to mount an unprecedented assault on the rule of law. 2,000 Justice Department, I think it's 2,000 Justice Department lawyers, former lawyers, have called for his resignation because of what he's done. So people have changed their view in ways that are very dramatic. And McConnell has certainly changed his views, or, you know, it depends for McConnell, who's in power and, you know, situation ethics, basically.
So now looking at the prospect of a Democratic Senate and the opportunity for a realignment ideologically, but also personally, what do you think if he becomes majority leader, Senator Schumer's attitude will be in attempting to restore the next great Senate?
I think that Senator Schumer, will assess quite quickly whether he has to do everything on a solely partisan basis, or whether he would be able to find certain Republicans who recognize that the election of a new president mean that they have to change their views or moderate their views or go back to being real senators. As I said, like Portman, you can think of others. The question is, what will Senator Schumer find? My guess is that we're going to have, I think we need to have a period of legislative activity and creativity that happens very rarely in our country. It happened in after FDR was elected, and it happened after LBJ was elected. And if you look back, there aren't that many periods like that. The times demand that kind of period now. And I'm sure that President Biden will define the agenda if elected. But Senator Schumer will represent and come to provide leadership on what is the central thrust of the Democratic Party. But whether he can do it with some Republicans or not will remains to be seen.
And do you think that Schumer has the mojo to accomplish an enduring period of legislative progress in a way that his Democratic predecessors have not, most immediately, in the sense that 2008 was a very short-lived period of recovery and did not afford the Obama administration or coalition the opportunity to legislate beyond the Affordable Care Act. And so I think, is it not important to assess what went wrong there and how the Democratic playbook ought to function?
I'm quite sure that Vice President Biden, Senator Schumer, and many Democrats have looked very carefully at what went wrong in 2009 and 10, why they weren't able, why the Obama administration could not accomplish everything it wanted to. It had ambitious goals, and I think it did some important things, but it did not accomplish everything it wanted. But I, you know, look, I subscribe. I believe that a lot of this depends on the skill of political leaders, but I also believe that it depends on, I share Bernie Sanders' views. It depends on the mood of the country. It depends on what the public is demanding. And I believe that the public American people will be supportive of dramatic change. They, you know, at that's, I don't believe they were necessarily supportive of dramatic change in 2009 and 10. They were supportive of, let's recover from this financial crisis. But beyond that, things bogged down.
Right.
So it's the leaders on the one hand, but it's also the mood in the country and the intensity of the commitment.
Right, right. And I think that there was a failure of imagination to understand what that coalition could build after the campaign in 2008 and focusing entirely on healthcare was a hindrance politically in being able to preserve legislative power to advance an agenda beyond that issue. But when I ask if he has the mojo, I also mean the hardball in him, because it hasn't been clear in recent years whether he has been the most effective Senate minority leader, in the same way Speaker Pelosi has appeared as being effective in her negotiations with the White House and having the upper hand. With Schumer, I think, and with the entire Democratic leadership, it has skewed older and just as much as the Republicans, and maybe some ways more age-wise, it has skewed unrepresentative of the coalition that he and Patty Murray and Mark Warner are supposed to represent. And we've talked before about the importance of Brian Schatz and Chris Murphy and Martin Heinrich and the younger leaders of the Democratic Party to emerge more visibly, whether or not the chamber retains Republican control, but especially in the event that that there is Democratic control. So I suppose you're saying that Schumer is going to make a calculation on how much the Republicans, like a Portman, will reset and not be beholden to Republican orthodoxy. There will be an unleashing and an independence that emerges in some corners of the Republican caucus. But if that doesn't happen, his success is going to be perhaps more attributed to the mood of the country, but also his fiber, his willingness to play hardball. And I don't know if you think that he possesses the sort of FDR, LBJ qualities that would be required.
Well, it's Biden and that will have to possess those qualities in the first instance. But I'm pretty comfortable that, and we may differ on this, but I'm pretty comfortable that Schumer is skilled enough and has enough brains and heart to help accomplish a Democratic agenda that is far-reaching. And but part of that, Alexander, is my belief that Schumer is very sensitive to the talents, the range of talents in the caucus. I think you'll, in a way, and this was what Mansfield did so well, and better than anybody, but certainly Robert Byrd was aware of it too. They use the talents in the caucus pretty well. I think that we will not only see the views of Brian Schatz or Heinrich or Chris Murphy, but these senators will play an important role in the future. I have no doubt that Schumer will utilize them effectively and allow them to be effective.
But there's Ira, that
I guess the way I would say it, Alexander, is when I list the many concerns I have about the future of the country, that's very low on my list. I think he is capable of doing that.
I hear you, Ira. And just to close, I think that The important reality, though, is that if the Democrats don't take back the Senate, that there will be more of an autopsy or reality check, however you want to call it, in terms of not just Schumer's capacity, but whether or not he is the right face of the party to be in opposition to a second term of Donald Trump. I mean, I think that that's not a concern, but in the event that Trump is reelected, it seems rather clear that the Democrats will need to find a new leader.
I think that, well, I agree with that in the sense that if Trump were somehow reelected, I believe we would have to see new leadership on both sides of the Hill, despite how superb Speaker Pelosi has been, in my view. But I think that, I subscribe to the view that Trump will not be reelected and cannot be reelected.
So in the event that you're describing, the final question I have for you, Ira, is institutional reform. How far do you think a new Senate might go in supporting the kind of reform that would enable a majority, but not a supermajority, to legislate? How far do you think Biden and Schumer will have to go to get there?
I think they will go as far as they need to. And by that, I mean that in the early going, and a very early going, even after the month after the election and before Biden would take office if elected, they will be doing their assessment of what's the disposition in their caucus, what's the disposition and the possibility of Republicans who have now seen the light. If they don't find it, any movement on the Republican side, any potential movement on the Republican side, I have no doubt there'll be a serious effort to get rid of the filibuster and do anything they can by majority rule. As you know, you can do a lot by majority rule without getting rid of the filibuster by using the Budget Act and reconciliation process. But no, look, I think that decision remains ahead. But there's nothing, if Biden is elected, if the Democrats take the Senate, there's nothing that will stand in the way, I believe, of them having an extraordinary period of legislative activity.
Ira Shapiro, author of The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis, and Broken, Can the Senate Save Itself and the Country? Well, he just answered, can they save the country? Can they save themselves? We shall see. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks so much.